Okay, greetings everyone in the room. We're going to get started. Greetings. This is the Accountability and Transparency Review Team 2 on November 18th at ICANN Buenos Aires. Welcome everyone in the room. Welcome to everyone online. Our first meeting of the week is with the SSAC. Welcome members of the SSAC. We look forward to hearing from you in the next hour, I believe we have. Let me provide some opening thoughts in terms of our engagement at this point of the process. The ATRT2 has published a draft report and draft recommendations that is out for public comment. Over the course of this week in Buenos Aires, we will be meeting face-to-face with the different constituency parts of the ICANN community to hear from you about that draft report and recommendations. We will be publishing our final report on December 31st of this year. That means we have roughly 4 to 5 weeks' time to take on board any additional feedback or reactions to the draft report and recommendations, and to modify that before we issue our final report and recommendations to the ICANN board. So really what we would like to hear from you are any specific reactions you have to our proposed recommendations. I guess to put a finer point on it, what did we miss? What might we change in those draft recommendations? Are there other facts or materials that we should be considering before we move to a final recommendation on any of those recommendations? We are really looking forward to hearing your thoughts in that regard. With respect to the structure of the report and the recommendations, to be clear, this is the SSAC, and part of our work was to assess ICANN's implementation of the Security, Stability, and Resiliency Review Team's recommendations. A quirk in our work, how do you like that, is that we are not offering new recommendations on that piece of our work. So the SSR Review Team's recommendations have been assessed by ATRT2. How did ICANN do in implementing those recommendations? That work was done primarily by David Conrad, our colleague here. Thank you, David. And is part of our report. But we are only making new recommendations with respect to ATRT1 work. It's just a slight quirk in our work. So specifically, SSAC feedback on the assessment of SSR review team recommendations would be obviously important. But any other aspect of our draft report and recommendations, you are full members of the community. Whatever the nature of the recommendation is, if there's something we should think hard about before we move to final report, please let us know. Before I open up the floor for input from SSAC members, is there anybody, any comment from the review team, anyone member of the review team who'd like to weigh in and add to that? All set? Okay. With that, the time is yours. We look forward to hearing from you. Please, Patrick.
Thank you very much, Patrick Feldstrom, Chair of SSAC. I must say that when you sent out the report and we passed it around in SSAC, it was quite silent also on the SSAC side. I looked through it myself and draw the conclusion that in general I think that is a indication that people think that you have done a good job. We have in general, maybe that is because of David, I don't know.
No, it's actually more in spite of.
It's in spite of David. Now, a little bit more seriously, we have, as you'll know, been working quite actively during the last couple of years with all the various recommendations, including the SSR ones, and we have been quite happy with what has been done. Regarding what you are saying about SSR, I take on as an action to really make sure that we are reviewing those kind of things. So I have not heard any input on that. Let me ask if there is any ESSAC member around the room at the moment that on the fly have something to say about that. Okay, so I take that on that as an action to review it in specifically the context that you were just describing. One thing that that I would like to bring up, though, a different issue, if that is okay with you. In your report on page 65 regarding, it's on finance, accountability, and transparency. That starts on page 61. But if you go down, let's see, I need to scroll myself. You have findings there. So if you go down to finding number 3, you talk about prioritization of the work of ICANN. One thing that we in ESSAC have been working with quite a lot together with Xavier, and also I've been talking a little bit and trying to coordinate with other SO and ACs, is that we believe that it's a little bit difficult for the community itself to review what additional expenditures are to be accepted or not when the actual list of extra expenditures is so extremely long as it is. People don't really read through the whole list, and you don't really know what you're going to say yes or no to. And to some degree, in the approval process, we see some kind of fatigue and randomness in the in sort of the selection of what is to be accepted or not. So we have requested, I have requested that the list becomes much shorter, and that should be based on specifically one criteria. And that has to do with something that we have described from ESSAC side, to separate between recurring extra expenditures and new ones. Because there are certain expenditures which have been sort of repeated and repeated and repeated year after year after year. And we believe that those should be reviewed in a different context than new requests. And I also think that there is, if it is the case that something is a recurrent approved expenditure for, let's say, 3 years in a row, I think there should be a question asked why it's not moved into ICANN budget. And then there should be a separate, that doesn't say that it should be done forever and ever and ever, but there's a different view of stopping funding a recurring activity from starting a new one. We, for example, in ESSAC, what happened is that one example which we have been working with quite hard is that we have a meeting that we have had for 8 or 9 years, an interim meeting between ICANN meetings that have been funded by and approved by ICANN year after year after year. And then 1 year, suddenly it was not accepted, and we didn't really understand why. And the reason when looking why it was not accepted, it was simply just because we don't approve funding of interim or meetings between ICANN meetings. But wait a second, you have approved it like 7 years in a row. okay, if it is the case that you want to stop fund it, let's have that discussion. That's fine. Unfortunately, that ended up being so much turmoil, so it ended up being a board issue. And it ended up being quite messy. Today, and that was also then sort of discussed here and there, and at the end of the day, the cost for that is now moved to ICANN budget. Okay. But that sort of kind of mess, just because it's a recurring cost, an approval of recurring cost, so that sort of, it seems to be the case that you're nodding, so it seems to be the case that you understand what I mean by continued approval of recurring costs that are not part of ICANN budget, moving extraordinary expenses into ICANN budget, stopping recurring cost and approval of new things. So if it's possible to categorize those kind of things, we believe that the review, it will be easier, because what is specifically important to review are the new items that I can put on its sort of going to pay for or do for.
Thank you, Patrick. And trying to take good notes here too, but the comment window is still open. So if you have even a short comment that gives us specific examples of what you're mentioning here so we get it right in our final report would be more than welcome.
I'm happy. Specifically, as we have this as an example of something that went through this, what I would say, very thorough review, and after that review, it ended up being part of ICANN budget. So that will be easy to describe. So that was actually the only thing that I had myself. I would like to open up the floor if someone else have something to talk about.
Avery.
Sorry, I know you were nodding that you understood, but I didn't quite understand, so I guess. So when – this is Avery speaking. So when something moves into the permanent budget, does it then no longer get reviewed? And I guess perhaps I'm showing my ignorance on the – so and is that the kind of thing that one has to worry about leading to budget getting ever larger because things get moved into permanent? Or – as I say, I'm showing my ignorance of budgets, but how is being recurring different than budget?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's actually a very, very good, very, very good question. The reason why I'm talking about moving things into the ICANN budget, or maybe it should be sort of just a different category, has to do with the fact that today the whole operation of ICANN is extremely difficult when you are changing fiscal years. Because when you're planning your activities in your group, it's really, really hard to do something in the first quarter, even though it's something that you actually have done 7 years in a row. So you sort of take for granted that it will be approved, if you see what I mean. That said, absolutely should recurring costs that are moved into budget not be done forever and ever and ever. But the decision of taking something out of the budget should be sort of a higher barrier than saying no to something that is a new cost. Because if you have something that is recurring, in that case, the SO or AC or whatever activity you do, and when you're coming close to one fiscal year and you plan the next one, you are sort of planning your activities, first of all, that you have your normal operation that is based on what you have done, and then you have the modifications. You stop doing something and you start doing something. And I just would like to separate those kind of things, the normal operation, the stopping doing things, and the starting doing things. So, of course, there should be a review, otherwise you get sort of budget bloat and you just add things and add things. And I completely agree with the concerns that you have that the budget and everything just grows and grows and grows. And that should there should absolutely be a mechanism against that, yes.
Okay, so just to clarify, what you're recommending is that there not be a recurring, and is it the category of everything that is a recurring thing should be considered as a budget item and...
Okay, so this is Barbara Roseman, ICANN staff. The way that the budget is built each year in each department is that we actually start with a zero budget. And so even items that are considered to be recurring items, recurring events, have to be added in and approved each year. So there's no potential for something being added in and never reviewed again. That just doesn't happen. What Patrick is referring to is that we treat requests from the SOs and the ACs as... I can't even remember what the word is that they use, but they're like exceptional requests.
Extraordinary budget requests.
And when you have an extraordinary budget request that is, in fact, the same from year to year and has been approved from year to year, then it seems appropriate to move that into the standard budget model. And you will get reviewed every year, but it just gets reviewed under a different set of considerations. And so that's the concern that Patrick's expressing.
But this is Patrick here again. Let me try to write this down, send this in writing. But I think this is, and once again, I think this is important to do this because the goal is, there are two goals. One, to make it easier for an organization to move into the new fiscal year. The last two budget years, we have had two rounds of extraordinary budget requests. One, which is fast track for the first quarter, and then you do sort of the real extraordinary budget request just because you don't want to have operations of ICANN to stop just because the budget is not approved. And then the other thing, so for operational reasons, the other thing is that I would like to decrease and minimize the list of extraordinary budget requests which are new. Because I think when the extraordinary budget requests go to public comment, which they are, I think it's really important that the community is really noticing what are the new ones and make a decision whether, because that's where the real bloat is when you sort of add and add and add, which are new things.
Thank you. Alan?
It sounds like what you're focusing on right now are issues related to budget expenses that will occur early in the fiscal year. There's certainly some feeling in other groups that, yes, the two rounds of extraordinary requests to separate the two may address that issue, but adds an extra significant level of bloat to the work you have to do, almost as if we need a tick box saying this is early in the budget year. If you're going to, if you're not going to approve a recurring early in the budget year one, you better give us real fast notice and understand what you're doing.
Yeah, and that's why, so there are two, once again, there are two reasons. One is the operational issue, and that only hits the things that are, let's say, in the first quarter, because the new way they are managing the extraordinary budget request and that Xavier is starting the whole budget work much, much earlier, nowadays it's literally only the first quarter. When I started, took over as chair, it was actually things that also were in second quarter, and that was a little bit problematic. But also the other reason is also very important for me, and that is this categorization. I claim, and the theory is that the review by the community will be easier.
Any other questions, review team members? David.
There was some discussion internally within the ATRT, too, regarding one of the observations that was made in the SSR review, specifically on page C11, and the recommendation in the SSR was that the roles and responsibilities for SAC, ICANN should publish a document clearly outlining the roles and responsibilities for both SAC and RSAC in order to clearly delineate the activities of the two groups. ICANN should seek consensus for this across both groups, recognizing the history and circumstances of the formation of each. ICANN should consider appropriate resourcing for both groups consistent with the demands placed upon them. And in the internal discussion that we had, Dr. Crocker had indicated that he felt that the wording inappropriately implies that there should be a public comment period in the response to the comments that I had written that in on page C11, the last paragraph, it says, documenting SAC roles and responsibilities. Within its operating procedures, SAC has self-defined its roles and responsibilities. No efforts have yet been made to gain input or consensus from RSAC or the larger community as to whether those roles and responsibilities are appropriate. As I mentioned, Dr. Crocker indicated that he thought the wording was inappropriate. It implies that there should be a public comment period on the operating procedures, and he felt that it is an internal document that captures the processes in effect and is not a policy document. I was wondering if SAC members could comment on their view related to the operating procedures and whether public comment would be appropriate.
Thank you very much. Yes, we have been talking about this in SAC, as I said, what is said here, the way I read it, that SAC has self-defined its roles and responsibilities, and that is correct. Regarding the input and consensus for RSAC, one of the main reason why we have not reached out to RSAC is because of the restructuring of RSAC that is currently going on. The input that we have got from the restructuring, both via liaison between me and the current vice chairs of RSAC, but also from the liaison that we in SAC have from RSAC and vice versa, is that we in SAC do believe that the restructuring of RSAC is following a good path. And at the moment, we have not felt that we wanted to make that more complicated by starting a discussion with them. It's important that they can reform and self-define themselves first. And then when they are done, then we can, we have said that we will look at overlap or gap between the organizations. I don't personally, I don't mind, and not only personally, but also as a chair of ESSAC, I don't mind having a public comment on what finally ends up being sort of being recommended. But I think that at the moment, as I said, we in ESSAC have self-defined what we are doing. I think it's good if the steps could be that RSAC can finish their work. We together are trying to identify whether there is gap or overlap, and we sort of come to a proposal on how to handle that. That output is something that could be at least made available and sent to public comment. So to some degree, I disagree with Dr. Crocker that say that it should not go on public comment. But I would like to separate a little bit whether the sort of... So I think the work item should come from inside. Does it make sense? Or Jim, maybe?
Yeah, sure. Question. When do you expect that RSAC is going to be... work is going to be completed?
This is Barbara Rosen's staff again. I support the RSAC. And so they're in the midst of concluding their process documentation and reorganization. They anticipate to have most of the work done by the end of this year with formation of the what they're calling the caucus, which is the larger group of participants besides the executive committee of RSAC. So they anticipate that that's going to start formation within the next month or so and continue on through the first quarter of the year with an ongoing option to invite additional participants as they identify needs that would be appropriate for their group. Work in this area has actually been progressing fairly well within the group. It's just that they are not meeting very frequently at the moment, and we are addressing that by setting up regular meetings that should progress things further. So,
and I'm not trying to nail this down too much, but when that work is done on the caucus and that's up and running, is that the point in time where there'll be clarity so ESSAC can take a look and begin to define gaps and overlap?
So this is Jim Galvin. I want to make one important distinction, I think, in this set of characterizations here. There are three things, I think, that we're talking about. ESSAC has a charter, and to the extent that it is a committee of the board, you know, if the community or the ATRT has issues, then the issue would be with the charter and with the board and how that is characterized. And I certainly would welcome any, you know, comments or input that ATRT wants to make on that and its content and how that works. I don't have any issue myself with the distinction between operating procedures and roles and responsibilities. I would think with the operating procedures that would be an internal document to ESSAC, and you know ESSAC makes that available to the community so that they're aware of how ESSAC works. But it would be interesting if the ATRT wants to examine whether or not that should be something which is subject to public comment. I mean, it's not something that I would suggest, but there is that. Our roles and responsibilities, yes, ESSAC has drafted them, and we've drafted them and included them in the operating procedures, and they are drawn from the charter and the way in which we expect to work with the board. So I go back to my first comment. I think if there's issues or concerns there, it should be drawn from the charter and its content and our relationship with the board. And that would be where I would focus comments. You know, I mean, if the ATRT wants to do something different, that's fine, and I'd be interested in just understanding where that's coming from.
Thank you, Jim. Aubrey.
Thank you. I wanted to ask, and I understand the self-determination part of operating procedures, but I guess I'm wondering in what way is that seen as incompatible with commentary from a wider community that then is taken in by whether it's ESSAC or any other AC to basically sort of, it went out, public comment either comes in or doesn't, so often doesn't, and then you all as an internal matter, would take that into account and deal with it. And not that that means you need further approvals, but it just means that the community does get a comment that you then consider, sort of the same procedure we're asking everywhere, that advisory committees give comment and it gets considered. And so I'm not sure I understand why that would be incompatible with an advisory committee, with SSAC being self-determining in terms of its operating procedures. In other words, you get the comment, you consider it, but you do still what you think is right for your advisory committee.
I guess the question I would ask in putting this back, do the other groups in ICANN have their operating procedures reviewed by the community and subject to public comment?
I guess my question is more, should all advisory committees and supporting organizations have them reviewed by the community and then still be self-determinative? So I'm trying to understand why the review is incompatible with self-determination.
Fair enough. I don't have a strong opinion on that. You know, I think that to the extent that I think being equitable is more important than anything else. You know, if the ATRT thinks it's important that all groups should have their operating procedures examined and compared and reviewed by the community at large, then I think that's fine. You know.
So you don't see it as being essentially incompatible with self-determination?
Yes, true. Thank you.
Is it related? Yeah. Then David. Alan?
Yeah, for clarification, the role of ATRT2 in the context of SSR stuff was to review the implementation of the recommendations from the original SSRRT team. ATRT itself doesn't have a particular view, as far as you know, I know, on creating new recommendations regarding what SSAC or any of the ACs should actually do. I'm just was actually referencing in the context of recommendation 6 of the original SSR review team. I guess one of the issues is, or maybe, that within the standard operating procedures of SSAC, the roles and responsibilities are included. And it may be that in order to address the specifics of recommendation 6, that those should be split out into a separate, you know, not a charter because that's already been defined, but a separate document that defines the roles and responsibilities, and that should be coordinated with SSAC and potentially the wider community.
Thanks. Alan?
Yeah, just to answer the question of are others subject to review, SOs, since they create policy, the bylaws generally put them subject to board oversight, which often includes a public comment process. ACs, less so, although some on occasion have subjected themselves to that when they felt it was warranted, but it's not a standard practice.
Other issues? Larry.
So I'd like to go back to the base report and not the specific analysis that David quarterbacked on the specific review team. But if you look at the base report, I guess I'm interested in a couple of things. One is, are there recommendations that we have made that strongly resonate with any of you that you want to make sure we preserve in the final document? And I guess the opposite question is, did we get it wrong somewhere? Is there something we're recommending that people have an issue with or feel like we missed the boat on in some fashion? So I'll just put those two questions out there.
Don?
There. Okay. All the different rooms have different setups. The one that resonated with, I think, all of us right off the top was the one concerning accountability for responding to what advisory committees recommend and making sure we get me know what action is or isn't taken and why. That jumped out at, like I said, jumped out at everybody. As good, it jumped.
Thank you, Don. Patrick.
Yeah, what has happened with the various recommendations that, that we have given from ESSAC is something that we have been working specifically with the board the last couple of years, and that has resulted so far in two different things. The first thing is that we have understood, and I claim that we have been better on writing the recommendations much more clear. So what we are writing is actually easier to is more actionable. Let me phrase it that way. We are spending much more time on the actual wording of the recommendations. The second thing that has happened is that ICANN staff has created a tracker for recommendations that are given that should be possible to be used by anyone. And currently, it is in beta. It is an early release where it's tested with ESSAC and ALAC. We used it from ESSAC for this meeting. When we prepared for this meeting, and our feedback that we gave to the board yesterday is that tool has made it much easier for us. I haven't got full feedback from ESSAC members because we are using it for the first time during this meeting, but the work, at least for us in sort of the what we call the admin committee, the leadership of ESSAC, for us that has really helped, and we think that is absolutely on the right track. The things that might be weak so far is that the tool so far is designed, and also that is, of course, the easiest thing to track. That has to do with recommendations that an SO or AC, that an AC is or someone else is given. A recommendation that in, that we state we recommend the board to do something. The tool at the moment is best at tracking that until its completion. Where there might be weaknesses is, for example, what happens if there is a recommendation that the board decides not to do? How do you make that visible? How do you track that? We don't have any clear, it's good for us that so far all the recommendations that we have in the tool actually was implemented. We have been given such a good recommendation, so they are not said no to anything, which which is extraordinary, of course. But that is something that needs to be tracked. Another thing which is a little bit unclear so far is if it is the case that you have sort of recommendations for sort of the same thing from two different ACs that partially overlap, and then the actual action by the board might be for the overlap or a subset of a recommendation. That is also something that you would like to detect a little bit more easily. So the tool at the moment is only for sort of one thing at a time from the beginning to the end. In general, we think that it's a good start, and this is, I claim, the tool that we have been asking for, which we also brought up last time we met.
Alan, before I get there, just ask you to elaborate a bit, Patrick. And first of all, thank you for the feedback. We do want to reflect in the report things that are going well, improvements. And if this is a specific example, this is useful for the report. Can you elaborate a little bit more about what you saw as the challenge around recommendations from two different ACs that overlap? What's the substantive challenge there?
For example, if it is the, let's take an example, variant TLDs. It might be the case that we from ESSAC comment on variant TLDs together with, for example, Trademark Clearinghouse, which is a recommendation that we have at the moment, where we look at the instability and issues with variants and Trademark Clearinghouse from a technology stability issue or implementability issue. So it's from the technical angle. And then it might be the case that ALAC is coming with recommendations on variants and internationalized domain names from a cultural usability perspective. It might be the case that those two recommendations are not aligned one-to-one. So that is what I call two recommendations, which are what I would call overlapping, that are targeting the same kind of issue. And what then staff and board might do is to compile those two into one action, which they are then acting on. And the question is then, should that action be in this tool recorded twice, one for each one of the recommendations, or should it be visible that the two recommendations got merged somewhere and then acted upon? And the question is whether that kind of detail is actually needed. At the moment, it will be recorded twice. Okay. So the question is, which we don't know, and we just have to use the tool to see whether it's needed to sort of be able to see those kind of merges that if I were receiving on the receiving end of recommendations, I would absolutely do those kind of things and try to sort of merge recommendations that have to do the same kind of, that can turn into as minimal set of actions as possible. So what I'm talking about is when you don't have a one-to-one mapping between recommendation and action.
Thank you. That clarifies it. If I may offer one thought and then go to Alan, with respect to your prior question about in the tool, it tracks things till the end state, but what if the board decides not to follow recommendation? Just coming out of ATRT1 work with respect to board resolutions and also with respect to how the board disposes of recommendations from the review team, there is a baseline expectation that if the board doesn't follow an input from the ATRT or from the community, that it reflects the rationale, a clearly stated rationale as to why they haven't followed the recommendation, and that's deemed to be a baseline expectation.
Yes, absolutely, and that is known for us, and we like that. I was explicit talking about the tool. So we just need to make sure that is in the tool itself, so you see it. So it's an implementation issue, of course, or user interface design, or call it whatever. But I just wanted to point out that this is sort of one piece of the tool that is not really tested yet. So,
understood. Clear. Thank you. Alan.
Thank you. I've got two questions on recommendations which aren't there. One of them alluded to, and the other one we discussed a lot but didn't make it. The first one is in the recommendation on improvements to the GNSO PDP, there's a little footnote. There's one of the recommendations is make sure that participants who are not funded by their companies to do the work can equitably participate in PDPs. And there's a footnote saying we're considering widening that recommendation to the community in general so that we're not restricting all of the activities to those who happen to have private funding to do it. And I would have thought that may well be applicable to ESSAC in that do you end up being restricted because you have limited funding and the people have no other means of getting here or other participation? So that's number one, and I'll go to number two once we finish any discussion on this.
The general answer to your question is yes. One of the first reviews I did as a chair of ESSAC was to see, if I express it as, where ESSAC is meeting geographically. And we discovered that ESSAC members do meet at IETF meetings and other conferences than ESSAC meetings. And I thought that was not a good thing. Of course, it's good that ESSAC is meeting, but that results in individuals being members of ESSAC not interacting with the ICANN community, which is the bad thing. So then I checked, why are people not coming to ICANN meeting? And funding was one of the issues. So what I did was that, and what we have done since then, is that we have requested funding for ESSAC members that we have requested travel funding for ESSAC members that have not been able to get funding themselves for these meetings, just like point out, and that just similar to what has been done in other SO and ACs. The funding for ESSAC members have increased, and we are currently up to about 10 ESSAC members. There are a little bit more than 20 ESSAC members coming, so we are looking at a little bit less than 50% of the ESSAC members do get funding. We're carefully tracking this. It happened in the Beijing meeting that we had funding for one person less than the requests, and that, of course, created an issue that we had to say no to one ESSAC member. At the moment, our budget in ESSAC is a little bit better because we didn't use all travel funding we have. So for after Beijing, mm-hmm. we have been able to say yes to everyone that requested travel funding. And I think for this meeting might be 9 or something. I don't remember exactly, but order of 10 people. We have understood and got a clear message from the board and from the CEO of ICANN that if it is the case that we're only looking at one person that we have to say no to, then we should not just say no, we should actually come in and ask whether we cannot get some extra money for that specific person. So to answer your question, yes, funding do help making sure that ESSAC members come here. We think it's good. Our explanation has been received well by ICANN board and the CEO that also believe that it's important to bring ESSAC members here. And at the moment and for the last two fiscal years, we have been able to get the funding that we have requested for this specific issue. It is part of the extraordinary budget request that we were talking about before. So this is one of those kind of things which are sort of what I would call under the category of recurring requests, the order of 10 to 15 people, where if that is significantly increased or decreased, that is a different issue, though. But our planning and people's planning, members' planning of ESSAC, is that we are able to get approximately 10 people of travel funding. Yes, I just mentioned earlier, Barbara pointed out to me that we have this intersessional meeting, which once a year, everyone gets funding for that one. That's part of the budget for that specific meeting, because we find it being very important that everyone comes to that meeting. Of course, there are several cases of ESSAC members that choose themselves not to receive funding, depending on their employer, they work for government, or other kind of things. So for the ICANN meetings, people have to explicitly request, and we sort of, and it is people that need funding. For the intersessional meeting, it's the other way around. That's an opt-out mechanism for funding.
As Brian suggested, to the extent that you feel this would be an important thing to be explicitly said, which to a large extent would bind ICANN to do it, as opposed to out of the goodwill they're doing it this year. Comments are welcome.
Yes, I could. Jim wanted to say a few words. I would say yes, because the theory that I had as an incoming chair, that providing travel funding would increase the quality and the number of work items that we can produce in ESSAC, and also increase the communication between ESSAC members and ICANN, other participants in the ICANN community, that theory that we had proved to be true. When I took on, ESSAC produced about 4 reports a year. This year, we will probably produce 7. No, sorry, 4, 7... No, nine.
Yeah.
Nine. It will be 9 reports this year instead of 4, and that is sort of part of the result of this.
Thank you. This is Jim Galvin. Alan, you said something else in your question that I just wanted to see if this was part of it. You talked about providing funding in the PDP process. We've been talking a bit about the process that ESSAC has gone through to get its support to come to the meeting. The observation context that I want to put there is many ESSAC members, though not all, of course, really are in a position that they are just, you know, technical experts in the field that they're in, and they're generally not directly related to the ICANN set of things. So, you know, we went through this process, and so ESSAC has significant support to bring that expertise to ICANN. But you made reference to being part of the PDP and the PDP process, and were you just looking for a worked example of how ESSAC does things, or is there a ESSAC contributing to PDP process more directly that was part of your question?
The current recommendation is specifically in regard to making sure that people who are not already funded by their companies can participate in PDPs. The footnote says we are considering widening that particular recommendation to other aspects of ICANN's activities, which is why I brought the question to you. Okay, that's where it was born, and only exists today as a firm recommendation. But we felt it was relevant because there's a lot of funding of volunteers going on in ICANN. In many cases, they're people who, if ICANN didn't fund them, they would come anyway. But people who are not doing something that their employer, their employer is paying for, have a harder time justifying using corporate money or their private money for that matter, to come here. So that's why I asked that particular question.
This is Barbara Roseman again. I would recommend that you actually ask this question of the RSAC as well, but I can give you a little bit of information about that ahead of time. As part of the reorganization of the RSAC, we did want to have the RSAC have a meeting with ICANN at least once a year, preferably twice a year. And so in that case, we actually, for the first year, provided funding for all members to attend one ICANN meeting. And that's most likely going to be Singapore. We haven't done an official decision yet, but that's everyone's intention. And so most of the members of RSAC will probably not choose to use the funding. However, there are a number of people who are within institutions like universities and stuff where this kind of funding would be extraordinary for them. And so to have it available is very, very important.
Question two, I guess question one.
That was question one. Okay. Question two is a recommendation we don't have at all. We talked about a lot, but it never got the level of effort put into it. And it's one that does not apply at all to ESSAC today, but one can imagine tomorrow it suddenly becomes relevant. And that's the whole concept of board reconsideration. Currently, if you follow the whole issues going on with confusingly similar and stuff, there's a huge number of board reconsideration requests, all of which are being denied. They've never been accepted. And the concept is, if the process was followed, no matter how bad the mistake was, that process cannot fix it. And one can imagine something related to security and stability, which ends up following that path. And there is some feeling, there has been some feeling in this committee and certainly in the community, that we need an other process. If that one wasn't designed to fix stupid mistakes, as it were, then there needs to be an other one. And I can certainly imagine situations where a registry requests something or whatever that would increase security stability and it gets denied. But we followed the process, and therefore there's no real way of reopening it. And I'm just wondering, does this resonate at all?
That's a good question. I think first of all, we in ESSAC do technical advice, and we don't really do any value judgment. So if you look at, for example, our latest recommendation regarding name collision, we are sort of describing. Let me try to use a metaphor here, which is kind of hard this time in the morning on Monday. But anyways, we are talking about how to design the scale you're going to use when you do the calculation of risk or what is acceptable, but we don't do the calculation. We are trying to stay away from that. But we are talking about what are the important issues to look at when you do the actual calculation. And because of that, we don't do any value judgment whether there might be reasons for that not to be implemented. You said it will lead to increased security and stability. How do you know? We're not going into that from an ESSAC perspective. The other part of this is that it sounded like if you alluded to a change of a contract from a contracted party, and I can do have the RSTEP process of that, where that kind of evaluation is done, which doesn't really directly touch ESSAC, although, of course, we take for granted, we have seen that our recommendations are things that our STEP panel members do refer to when they evaluate requests to changes to contract to the contracted parties. So I think from my personal, without consulting with other people in ESSAC, from my personal perspective, I think the value judgment of change of contractual terms for contracted parties that is happening as part of the RSTEP process, ESSAC is not involved.
Let me clarify. I wasn't suggesting that the reconsideration request or any other similar process be used by ESSAC. I don't think it applies to internal organizations and board decisions. But I can imagine a scenario where a decision such as an RSEP decision is made, and your review of it afterwards says they made the wrong decision, and right now the only remediation process that registry or other external organization would have is the process that currently yields no virtually every time. And that's the context in which I was raising it, not to reconsider your own recommendations, where I don't think it applies.
Jim.
Thank you. This is Jim Galvin. One of the other ESSAC members came up, Mark Seiden, and reminded me of an example of something that happened in the past, which this really was an issue. We had another ESSAC member during the Conficker situation, if you remember. The remediation that went on for Conficker was that the tens of thousands of names that would have come into existence would be set for reservation instead. There was a particular person who was going out to reserve all of these names, okay, and he had to buy the names in order to reserve them. And it took years for him to get money back for having done that. I mean, eventually ICANN had come around and said that they would not charge registries that were reserving those names. But he had started that process before that decision was made, and it was still a very long time. It was actually many years before he got his money back for having started that process and created that. So that's just a worked example of a situation when, yes, there are times when decisions and choices are made, and you know, one would think that common sense would apply here. You would have given the man his money back, but so
that's a classic example because they followed the rules that were on the book today.
Barbara,
I would just caution in this area that there's a difference between reconsideration of board decisions and reconsideration of corporate decisions. And this particular example is a corporate decision, and I happen to agree with how it eventually got resolved, but I think that it's actually very important to keep a distinction between decisions that are made at the board level and decisions that are made for within the corporation for you know, other using other rationale, like the rules that are on the books right now. If it were something to require a change in at the board level, you know, so for instance, all contracts have to be approved by the board, then that's one thing. But I would caution that it's something it's very clear to keep a distinction about, not to conflate the two. There is a process for going through the ombudsman to have corporate decisions reviewed as well, whereas the reconsideration is actually reserved for board decisions. And so I just, you know, you have to, if you want to recommend that there's something that deals with these other decisions, you have to be very clear that that's what you're talking about.
Go ahead. We'll check that. Just before we close, we have a few minutes. Patrick, you said at the outset that, I don't know how you put it, but something about there wasn't a lot of noise around our draft report, and that might mean that we did a good job. We can't afford to operate on that assumption, and I don't. You know, we observed this time around in the review team process that the community was very, very focused on new TLDs. I think we've felt the effect of that in terms of attention to the work of the review team. And I just say that objectively compared to the first time around. And not to mention some recent debates on internet governance that draw the energy of the community. So that's not an assumption we take. We really need to see feedback and input from the community to gauge whether we need to adjust this report. One final question I'd ask from me. A central thrust of our work was to gauge this time around not only how well did ICANN implement the recommendations of ATRT1 and the other review teams, but do we see a culture of transparency and accountability taking hold within ICANN as a result of these review team processes? Two areas we looked at specifically were in assessing implementation efforts. Are we seeing the effect of implementation on the staff at the board level, throughout the community? Do you see that culture of transparency and accountability growing, or are you seeing check-the-box type of implementation efforts? Yeah, we get that done and on we go, and I assume you appreciate the difference between the two. On those points, do any of you have any thoughts about the effect or effectiveness of the review team exercises themselves on the organization, good, bad, or indifferent?
I think, for example, the tracking tool that is now tested is one of the effects. So I think from ESSAC perspective, we have seen effect, which are absolutely not only checking the box, ticking the box. Regarding the silence, of course, that is, as the chair of ESSAC, it's my fault that I didn't whip ESSAC members enough to actually read the report and explicitly say whether they liked it or not. But I do have a couple action points on myself to go back to ESSAC and make sure that we are coming back in writing, both regarding these issues that we brought up, but also explicitly it was pointed out, for example, the SSR issues in the context that you just described. So we will come back in writing within a relatively short time to you on these issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciated. Any other thoughts, review team members, questions? We're getting close to close. Okay. Lisa? Okay, I think we're at the close. Thank you very much for the feedback. Again, the public comment period is open. Even if it's brief, whatever you can offer would be very well received and helpful in making our final report. And with that, I think everyone's going to move on to the opening session. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.